history interview with Richard Thieu in Cove, Oregon. It is Monday, December 12th, 2005. So we'll do another quick test. And can you tell me your full name and your birth date?
Richard Henry Thieu, April 25th, 1940.
Okay, where were you born?
I was born in Long Beach, California.
And how did you get to Union County? When did you first come here?
In 1957, my parents are Oregonians, and my dad was a naval officer, and so when he retired, they had always planned to move back to Oregon. They had grown up in Klamath County and wrote for a real estate brochure, any place south of Baker. Well, Baker didn't have this particular agency, so they sent one from LeGrand. And there was a place out in Somerville that sounded just like what we wanted. And so we came up to look at it, but of course it was sold by the time we got here. Mm-hmm. Ended up moving to our place in Cove.
And that was, although your parents had been Oregonians, that's the first time you had been to Oregon is when you moved here in 57?
Oh, no. We regularly came back to Oregon.
I guess I should say, but that's the first time you lived here in Oregon?
It is, other than for short periods when we're visiting relatives, and which we did quite often.
Now, were you, your father was a naval officer, you say?
Yes.
And what did your mother do?
Well, during World War II, she was a Rosie Riveter type, built electric boxes. And other than that, she had limited employment, mostly a stay-at-home mom. She did, for several years, cook down at Ascension School in Cove as the camp cook.
Now, what did your father do when he relocated your family here?
Well, he did a lot of different things. Of course, he had his naval pension, and he drove school bus for a number of years, and he worked here for a wheat farmer, driving grain trucks and combines and that sort of thing during harvest, and then he was camp manager part of the time down at Ascension.
Now, where did they homestead here in Union County?
Well, it's a place that had about 150 cherry trees up Mill Creek from Cove, and 80 acres, 60 of it in timber. And the cherry trees never paid off because they're on the wrong side of the canyon there, and they don't get enough sunshine. But, we still get some cherries off of them, but not commercial.
I see. Are your parents still living?
My mom is. My dad died in 1993.
And your mother still lives at this homestead?
Yes. She's been joined by my daughter, Jenny, and her husband and two children. And that's been a real blessing to all of us because we have... we're at the point where mom and the rest of the family are considering her going to a assisted living. She's 93, and she's getting too hard for her to stay by herself. So it was real nice for her, and it's nice for Jenny and her family to live there. So it's working out real well.
Now, you said that your family came to Union County about 1957. And so, were you still in school?
I was a senior.
And did you go to school here in Cove?
Yes. Moved from a school of about 3,000 to one of 47.
So, what year would you have graduated then?
I graduated in 58.
And tell me about that. So, you went to Cove for 1 year and graduated. What was that like, going from a huge city high school to one of 47?
Well, it was really kind of interesting as I look back on it. Of course, naturally, I didn't want to leave my friends down there and that sort of thing, but it wasn't an unexpected move. We had talked about it a lot of times, and I really liked Oregon from all our visits we made up here, so that wasn't a problem in and of itself, but coming here from a large school to one of 47, at first I was kind of resentful and, you know, city boy in a rural area, that sort of thing didn't work too well, but it took me about 2 weeks to realize how much better off I was here than where I had been before, because now I had 46 friends that I felt I could call any one of them up and say, let's go to a movie, and, you know, we could do that. While I began to realize in San Diego I had maybe 5 real good friends that I could call up and say, let's go to a movie. And so that difference in social things was very, very big difference, and something that was really helpful to me. On the other hand, the educational opportunities were much more limited. I had planned, for some stupid reason, to take both physics and chemistry when I was a senior. And here at Cove, they weren't offered in the same year. They were offered every other year, because of the lack of number of students, you can't do both of them. And so I never did take chemistry. I took physics, because that's what they were offering. And, you know, I took things like Radio Shop down in San Diego, and of course, nothing like that was ever offered here. And so, you know, those kind of opportunities were gone. But the education I received as far as basic English and social studies and those kinds of things was just as good or better.
Did you have any problem transferring any of your credits from California? Were there any struggles in that regard?
Not that I know of. The only thing in that light is that my English teacher up here asked me what kind of grades I got. And I said, well, B's and A's. And she said, oh, well, you're probably a B student then. And that's what I got after that. Didn't matter how hard I worked or how bad I worked even.
That was your grade.
That was my grade.
So you graduated in 1958?
Yes.
And there were 47, how many in your class?
Well, when we graduated, there were 11 seniors and one junior that graduated accelerated.
Do you still socialize or see any of your classmates?
Not very often. We had a 20th reunion in 78, and I think all but one showed up, plus some that had been in the class but had moved away or some reason dropped out or something.
Any other examples of what it was like what the stark differences were between living in San Diego and then living in Cove when you were just getting out of high school?
Well, several things popped to mind. One is that I was never involved in sports in San Diego because men in my family have always matured late. So I still grew an inch when I was 21, and consequently, with that kind of a factor, you don't have much chance to be among the athletic elite that requires you to be in a place like a 3,000-student school. And here, I suddenly discovered I was the biggest kid in school, and they said, you play football, don't you? And I'd always enjoyed sports and played in PE and that sort of thing, but had never played interscholastically of any kind. And so I did play football, and I really enjoyed it, and that's been a major part of my life since that time. I I played a little in college, and then I coached for almost 30 years. So it was a life changing kind of thing. But another example that my brother always uses, who was in the fifth grade when we moved up here, he always joked about how they were going to go visit someplace on some kind of field trip, and they were going to a big store, and the teacher was talking to them about an escalator, and he discovered he was the only one that had ever ridden in an escalator at that time. And so, you know, that kind of experience difference was pretty obvious. I remember he talked about it, and I knew it to some degree that a lot of students at our school had never been to Portland, never been down the river, had never been out of Union County at that time, because travel was a lot more difficult than it is now. It was before the freeway was put in.
Was that also before they paved this road to LeGrand? Was it paved when you
I think
here?
It was paved. Yeah, our road up to our house up Mill Creek was not paved. And a lot of the roads in the Cove area that are paved now were not. But I think that one, that main highway was paved to LeGrand and Keene.
Were you involved in any other activities here at school? Besides sports?
Not too much. The music program was very limited at the time, and I'm not much of a music person anyway, and the main things were things that we did as kids, you know, and at different times, you know. Kind of trouble we got into at Halloween. And
well, let's talk about some of those more social and day-to-day experiences with your friends and that kind of thing. About Halloween for starters?
Well, Halloween was interesting. When I experienced Halloween before, it was basically school would have a carnival, and you went to the carnival, and maybe you trick-or-treated around your home a little bit, but that was about it. Here they had kind of traditions that they did tricks. I remember one time somehow they got a donkey on the roof of the school. That was a story that they told, and they always had you drove your car around town, threw eggs at each other, and that sort of thing. In fact, I got in trouble for that because our car was a '54 Studebaker hardtop, and they hit it with an egg on the we call the B pillar, the back pillar of the roof, and it left concentric cracks in the paint. My dad wasn't pleased with that. But one of the things that I remember that I know that you'd probably get thrown in jail today that we did was there used to be a dump up Mill Creek Road up into the forest, and we went up there and hooked onto an old car body and dragged it downtown about 2, maybe 3 miles and made a barricade in the middle of town so cars couldn't get through. And I'm not sure what the purpose of that was other than just to do it. But one of the things that we did do was we cleaned it up. The next day, it was gone. And I remember being worried about the police showing up and that sort of thing, but in those days it just seemed like they just kind of winked at it and said, make sure you take care of it. And we did. And if you knew the town, you knew that if you came to that barricade, you could go around the old gas station and get through. But, of course, people who didn't know that were probably upset. But.
Did you, was there, were they still using the old gym for roller skating out here when you were young?
I think at that time they had banned that, that it was so hard on the floor that they were, because I remember them talking about it, and but I don't recall that it ever went on from the time I was here on.
What kind of social things did you do with your friends as you were finishing high school? Where would
well,
you go? What would you do?
And we had a lot more dances than the kids have now. We'd have one, you know, probably twice a month at least, average. And what in those days were called sock hops. And we would, you know, play records. And a lot of times for the bigger dance, they'd have a live band. Some kids would put together a band and, you know, five or six instruments, and would play for the people. And those dances were a lot of fun. It was fun to have that live band, but they were usually pretty limited in what they could play. When I was in college, I worked at Crater Lake National Park a couple summers, and they had a band that played at Diamond Lake with us. Far away, and we would go over there for a dance, and that band was probably the extreme. They played Moon River for slow and Louie Louie for fast, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
So you got kind of tired of it after a while.
Did you drive?
I did. I had use of my grandfather's car. He had died the same summer we moved up here. And my grandparents lived in San Diego also, and so my grandmother moved up also and lived in La Grande, and she didn't drive, so I had used that car, but I had to buy the gas for it too, and since most of the kids in the summer worked on the ranches and cherry orchards and so on, and had gas money, but I hadn't had the opportunity to do that because in fact, I had come to school after school already begun. So, but I remember that we used to save any pop bottles we could find and trade those in. And you have a dozen pop bottles, you could buy half a tank of gas or something. Today, probably not that much. But. I drove, and then, like I said, my dad had a Studebaker that I had learned to drive in, and then we had a pickup, too, that I drove when he did chores or whatever.
Did you drive into La Grande or go anywhere with your friends driving? What kind of things might you do there?
Yeah, I had a friend who had a 49 Chevy Fastback with a split manifold that you could hear coming for quite a ways, and we hung out together and did things, and the drive-in was operating at that time, drive-in theater, and a lot of times you'd go on dates to the drive-in and go to Nell's and Out, which was still operating, or was operating at that time, and A&W, which is now a Mexican restaurant down there.
Cinco de Mayo, I think.
Yeah, that's right. We'd go to town and just cruise at times. And
tell me about cruising in La Grande.
Well, I don't remember much about it other than, you know, it's the stuff that wishful thinking is made up of. You know, you always hope to meet the cute girls, and they would be more than willing to jump in the car and ride with you. But I don't remember that happening very often.
What was the layout of the cruise at that time? Where did it start and end? Where did it go?
It seemed like we cruised down to Safeway, the old Safeway building where the new library is now, and OBS, and then back up all different spots, turn around at the other end of town. Seems like maybe the Western Equipment Caterpillar place.
Was there anything like that here in Cove? Did you do any cruising in this?
Well, it only takes you about 20 seconds to cruise Cove, so it wasn't too... you'd always hang out and see what was happening. And then during the warmer months, the swimming pool was always a hangout place.
Where was that?
The Cove Hot Springs. Warm Springs. They call it Forest Cove Warm Springs, you know, Hot Springs. And it was always a popular place because they had to buy a bottle of pop or candy bar or whatever in there. And you could sit in the car and watch the swimmers, or you could go swimming, you know. The summer after high school, I worked some in the hayfield, so I got a bad hay fever case. We'd always go to the swimming pool after work to relax, and always felt good. Royal Borkman, who owned it at that time, would always make us take showers, make sure we take a shower before getting in the pool. That was always a hangout place.
Who owns that place?
A man named Bob Pratt owns it now. It's gone through several owners since then. And he's been doing a lot of real good upgrading of the facility. I don't hang out there much anymore.
Okay, so what happened? What happened after you graduated from high school? Did you work that summer? You said you worked in the hayfield, so you got hay fever.
Well, it was kind of funny because my dad being in the Navy and being in San Diego, I joined the Naval Reserve when I was a junior. But when we moved up here, no way you can attend any meetings up here with the reserve. So I'd always intended to join the regular Navy when I graduated. So when I graduated, a week after school was out, I headed for Portland to take my physical and get sent down to San Diego for boot camp and all that. When I got down there, they gave me an eye test, and I flunked my eye test. Because at the time, you had to have 2040 vision without glasses. And my, you can tell from the thickness of my glasses. Even though they had let me in the reserves, 3 days later I was back home. And we always joked because my mother had already turned my bedroom into a sewing room. So I worked that summer after that in the hay fields, like I said, until my allergy caught up with me. Then I went to OIT in Klamath Falls for a year in electronics. And about halfway through the year, I got a letter from the Naval Reserve that said, even though you flunked your eye test, we're still going to take you for your 2 years duty. Well, a reservist doesn't do anything different than a regular sailor does, so I was kind of puzzled by all this, but you know, I said, okay, and I went and took my test again in Portland, and this time, the first time it was a doctor that did it. The second time with the reserves, it was just a corpsman who did it. And when, you know, you always have that chart on the wall, and you he asks you what line can you read. Well, I can't see the chart. And so he said, well, walk up until you can see the big E clearly. And for me, that's about 4 or 5 feet from the wall. And he said, okay, and gave me my papers back, and I went on my way. And it was a couple years later that I happened to see my medical records and read on the back that this corpsman had written down, I think he's faking. And so it sent me on down to San Diego, and I went through a week of boot camp. Well, at the first, they said, you have to take an eye test again. So a whole bunch of us who had glasses went over and took the eye test. Well, they didn't say anything about whether you passed or not. They just sent you back to your company. I went through a week of boot camp, and I got this note from the medical officer, said report to the medical officer, and I did, and he said, well, why didn't you tell anybody you flunked your eye test? And I said, nobody told me that. And so he said, well, we're sending you home. Well, the day I was to go home, the chief that was in charge of the people that were going home said, well, I got good news for some of you. And the Congress had just changed the regulations, so as long as your eyes were corrected to 20/40 with your glasses, then you were okay. And so I ended up staying in the reserves for 2 more years. Should have gone on a destroyer that plied the Pacific. And so then when I got out of the Navy, then I went to Eastern for 4 years and graduated there and taught. And my first job was in Condon. Taught for 2 years there, and then I went to graduate school in Boston at the Episcopal Theological Seminary. And then I came back and taught. Well, the first year I was back, I was in Canyon City, and I earned my living however I could. And while I was in graduate school, Kathy and I got married also. I pumped gas, and Kathy worked for a dentist. She'd been trained as a dental technician, and delivered fuel oil and substituted.
Now we're back here in Union County?
No, that was in Grant County.
In Grant County, okay.
And then I got a job in Prairie City where I taught for 4 years, and then I came to LeGrand and was half-time at the Koinonia House on campus and half-time at Ascension School out here for 7 years. Well, I was only 1 year at Koinonia, and then I was full-time here at Ascension School until 82, when due to several circumstances the camp was having money problems, and so I went back to teaching and taught from 82 to a couple years ago.
Where at?
Here.
In Cove.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's back up then. You came back, you got out of the Navy, and you came back and went to school at Eastern. Was that still a teacher's college at that time? Had they evolved to Eastern Oregon College by then?
Yeah, it was Eastern Oregon College, and while teaching was probably the major area that they gave degrees for, they were beginning to branch out.
So you went there for 4 years. Did you major in education?
Yeah, at that time you got an education degree and had a major area somewhere. And I had a major in social studies, and I think I was 3 hours short of a major in humanities.
And did you train or do any of your teacher training in the Ackerman School when it was a lab?
No, I was all high school. I did my student teaching in Tennessee.
And so what subjects were you certified to teach when you finished up at Eastern?
That's kind of funny because my certificate, which is known as a pre-1965 certificate, allows me to teach anything in high school and middle school. And my major fields were anything in the social studies area and in the humanities area, and my first job was teaching English at Condon High School, which wasn't what I did my student teaching in, but...
What did you do student teaching in over at Pendleton?
Well, I was in a team teaching situation. They were doing some different kinds of teaching, and they had three teachers who taught several classes together, and so I just fit into their rotation and taught mostly U.S. history, if I remember correctly.
Then where did you say you got your master's degree at, and what was it in?
My master's was at Episcopal Theological School in Cambridge, Mass.
And we're continuing our interview with Richard Vu. It is still Monday, December 12, 2005. And so Episcopal Theological Seminary in Cambridge, Massachusetts, it was a master's of
divinity. Actually, at that time, it was kind of an interesting time to be there because that was right at the high point, I didn't want to call it that, Vietnam War protesting and civil rights and all of that, and so it was a time when things were changing a lot at the school. In fact, I believe that my class is the only class that ever graduated from there that didn't have to take a oral exam or a written exam to graduate. Now most graduate schools, you write a thesis or something of that nature. But at the time, a lot of students were protesting, having to do things just for a piece of paper and that sort of thing. And so the faculty and administration at the school said, well, we're sensitive to that, and so they said, well, this class of 1970, we're going to start not having to take these tests. And I was always very glad I didn't have to take them. Mm-hmm.
Now, what was your intention when you left Oregon to go to Cambridge to get this degree? Did you have a plan when you started that?
Yeah, at that time, one of the important goals of the Episcopal Church in Eastern Oregon, the Diocese of Eastern Oregon, was to find people who would be what we call non-stipendiary clergy. And that means that you don't get a salary from the church. You earn your salary doing whatever you do. And then you serve the church as clergy beyond that. And that was always my intention, to come back and teach and be non-stipendiary. And that's what I've done for 30 years, 35 years.
So you did this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right now I regularly do services at St. Stephen's in Baker City and at Sumter Community Church I'm at Baker City twice a month and once a month at something. And then wherever I do supply work, wherever they need me.
What do you mean when you say supply work?
Well, that maybe somebody like St. James Milk Freewater called the other day. They don't have a priest right now, and so they try to get someone to come in and celebrate communion for them and that sort of thing. And that's what I do.
Would that be similar, or well, not similar, but would that be in the same category as say substitute teaching?
Yeah, sort of. A little different, but yeah.
So, you came back to Oregon after you got your graduate degree, and you ended up here in Cove. When was that you came to Cove then?
We moved to Cove in 76. We had been living in La Grande when I was half-time at the K-House and half-time at Central School. And when I went full-time here, we moved to this property here. And and obviously, we've lived here ever since.
Okay. What were the duties there? What were your duties at the K-House, the job that you had there?
Well, I was never real successful, I think you would say, at the K-House, because my idea of what was the mission or goal of K-House was a little different than what others saw. I had experienced campus ministries as the old coffee house model, and that's what I was prepared to do. But I think the churches that sponsored K-House were thinking a little more traditional evangelism type of work. And while we did some good things while I was there, I didn't feel comfortable, and I don't think they did either. And so when the opportunity came to go full-time at a Central School, I did that.
And so in the beginning, you spent half a day at Ascension School. Tell me about Ascension School. Was that a private school?
No, it's actually not a school. Way back in the late 1800s, Samuel French, who was an early settler in Cove, left 80 acres to the church on which Ascension Church down here is built, and there's a parsonage, you might call it, and then in the early 1900s they built a school down there, a girls' school, and it was one of the first upper division schools in the state. They were successful for a number of years, and Samuel French left the property for a school. Well, in 1924, it was taken to court, and because the church no longer wanted to run a school, they wanted to run a more of a summer program. So the official name of the place is Ascension School Camp and Conference Center, where Ascension School is a name, not a description. And since 1924, when the judge said yes, school would include a camp conference type center, that they used it for that purpose, and now today it has developed into a really strong conference center with recently built a more of a hotel type facility down there, so you can have private bedrooms, different kinds of programs with that kind of facility that you couldn't do in the old cabin where you had 20 people staying in a cabin together. And while I was there, we had all kinds of groups that used it. The church, the Episcopal Church, the Diocese of Eastern Oregon, ran youth camps during the summer, and still do. And that was the main thing that the camp was there. While I was there, we tried to develop an all-year use of the camp. And since that time, that has become a fully functioning part of the camp. And, oh, I remember we used to have a lot of government groups that would come out and hold meetings, weekend meetings, where they could have food served to them and in a relaxed type of atmosphere. Groups like, probably the biggest group we had was the Women Aglow, which is a non-denominational Christian group. And they, in fact, one of the reasons that I left the camp was the fact that they decided that they were too big for the camp anymore and decided to go to a hotel kind of situation that could handle more than we could. And taking that rental out of our budget was one reason I went back to teaching. Along with the fact that when Ronald Reagan became president, he cut out a lot of the money that was used for government seminars and that sort of thing. So we lost kind of a double whammy there. We lost a lot of rentals all in one fell swoop. So.
Now, you said a few minutes ago that when you left the K House, you went full-time at the Episcopal Center there. So you did this for a number of years. How long?
7 years.
7 years. And then when the budget crunches came, you started teaching position again. And then you went to Cove?
Just happened to have an opening at Cove. In fact, I was on the school board at the time, so I resigned from the school board and interviewed for the job and signed.
And what did you teach?
Boy, I don't know. That's a long time ago. Basically, it was social studies, high school, and junior high. And I taught a lot of different classes over my 20-something years that I taught there. Anymore, I don't really remember the sequence in which I taught them. So. But I taught arts and crafts. I taught. I even taught math 1 year, which was not my deal. But seventh grade math was, in those days, was not too difficult. It was a pretty basic class. But even then, they were using lots of terms that I never used when I took seventh grade math. So it was hard for me to do.
You taught arts and crafts. What was that about? Was that a fluke that you drew that assignment? Or?
It was one of those things that happens, that they needed somebody to do it, and because my certificate allowed me to teach anything, there I was. I also taught auto shop later. My hobby is tutoring cars, and I've worked with that, and so they knew that, and when they first built the auto shop here about 10 years ago, I think now, they had a shop teacher who, for one reason or another, backed out at the last minute, and so they asked me to do it, and I didn't do it for another year, so I got another job.
You did that for 1 year. What kinds of things did you do in arts and crafts?
Everything. I I took some materials that I found and learned the basic way of teaching drawing. We did some computer work. This was in the early stages of computer when we were using Commodore 64s and that sort of thing, but we did that. And we did some carving. We did model rockets. We did kites.
Did you have girls in the class as well as boys for the arts and crafts?
Yeah.
And how long then did you teach at Cove? You retired when?
2 years ago. This is my second school year out of because I retired as far as PERS is concerned before I stopped teaching. I have two retirement dates.
Oh.
So when somebody asks me that, I always have to kind of hesitate. That's why I think of it as this is my second year of teaching.
And then since that time, you've always lived out here in Cove.
Yeah, we've never lived anywhere else. When we moved here, we had two daughters, and we were just starting school. Well, the oldest was just starting school. And then my son was born just about the time we started teaching. So they're all graduates of Cove High School.
Did any of your children, let's back up a little more. What's your wife's name and where did you meet her?
Kathy was a student at Condon when I first started teaching there. And I tell people that and they always start snickering because student teacher things don't happen. Well, it didn't happen then either. It just happened that we met after she graduated. She'd been going to dental school in Portland, and her pastor at Condon was a good friend of mine and was running a sports camp, and he asked me to help him, so I was helping him, and she came out for a visit, and we got reacquainted at that time. The rest is history.
When did you get married?
1968.
Where?
Right here at Ascension School. At the chapel down here, it's a very picturesque church, and a lot of people like to get married there. They restrict you to get married there because they don't want it to be a wedding chapel. But both my daughters were married there, and we were married there and used the camp facilities for reception.
So your wife grew up in Condon, was a dental tech, was attending school. How many children do you have? What are their orders from beginning to birth?
Well, Jenny's our oldest, and she's 34. And Rebecca, our middle child, is 30. And Rick, our youngest, is 23.
And they all went to Cove High.
They all graduated here, and Jenny and Rick have both attended Eastern. Jenny graduated in 93, I think. And she's been a teacher in Nevada. She got her start teaching in Nevada. And now she's basically a stay-at-home mom, except she coaches junior varsity basketball girls down at Cove and has coached everything from boys basketball to wrestling. She enjoys coaching a lot. We enjoy talking to coaches together. And Rebecca is married and lives in Oregon City. Her husband husband's a Portland police officer, and she works for the Commission on Children and Families. Anyway, the social services division. She works with families with children that have had some kind of problems, and works with a team that includes drug and alcohol counselors and justice department people, and so they work all, don't try to do it all themselves. It works as a team. It's been a very good program. I think it started at Oregon City. He was one of the first to be involved in it. And my son Rick is in his sixth year at Eastern. He thinks he will graduate someday, but he's working at it. And right now he's up at Tom Diamond's place up here in Cove, taking a class in glass blowing, which I think is an interesting thing to be doing.
Well, they don't do very much of that out here on this art department, I know that. Do you remember which puppet he made for the show?
I know he made a, well, he had, the snake was one of his. I think he worked on three different ones. I think he got thrown in on a couple where some other people couldn't do it or something. And I think the frog, snake and the frog, I don't know what's that one.
Your son goes to Eastern. Did any of your other children go to Eastern also?
Jenny did.
Uh-huh.
And Beck, Rebecca went to Western. We've had, in our family, when Rick graduates, he'll be the 15th Eastern graduate in our extended family. We had to marry some of them.
Yeah.
My older brother is a teacher in Crane. He has taught there since 1970. He retired a few years ago, but he retired and then he continued to teach two or three classes in the mornings. And but I think this last year he actually completely retired. And he has four children, and three of his children attended and his fourth one at the University of Oregon. And she's an Episcopal priest also. And my brother, who lives a block away down here, he took after my dad and drove school bus for I think he had 20 years of driving drove school bus. It's what he... He has a degree in biology from Eastern, but for one reason or another, he started driving school bus and likes it. So I can't imagine myself.
I think we've heard of that.
Probably.
I don't know if we've interviewed or not, but that strikes a familiar chord.
Well, his wife works at the Pierce Library. 20 years, all 30 years, something. And she just retired, so they have their motor home now, and so they're on the road. But his two sons both went to Eastern. JP, the oldest, he graduated. Oh goodness, I don't know. Not too long, 4 or 5 years ago. He just returned from Iraq. He's in the National Guard. And
with the battalion that just came back here a few weeks ago.
He lives in Tri-Cities now, in Washington. Christopher, his younger son, graduated from Eastern 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and he is now going to graduate school in Omaha, Nebraska. To be a physical trainer. And got married last summer, and JP got married.
Let's see, you probably know some of the people we've interviewed. It occurs to me, Mrs. Lurie up the street said that she worked at the Ascension place, or cooked there maybe.
Yeah. I think half the people in town have off and on. They've always, our current director down there does an excellent job of involving the school in the community. And since we have the new facility down there, a lot of groups hold meetings down there that they're not charged for or anything, and so that's been a real good community program. And we've traditionally hired teenagers to work in the kitchen, and that sort of thing. And then, of course, we have counselors, and most of our counselors come from someplace else. But a lot of times, all my kids work down there, and they grew. Of course, when I was the director down there, the girls grew up around it, you know, were down there a lot, and all that sort of thing. And my mom and dad, like I said, were employed down there at different times. While I was the director down there, I think almost all except maybe the first year, my mom was the cook down there. And that was really neat because she saw her cooking as a ministry. She wanted to treat people right. She'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and make bread for a camp, you know, where most people would go to the store and just buy the bread, just consume. But she would get down there and she made pocket bread, and she was her specialty. She won a lot of awards at the fair. We always talked her into entering her baking in particular. And so that was always a source of pride for me that she did that. But a lot of people in town that work there are, because it's a part-time job usually, because we don't have a lot of, like I said, it's just beginning to get, so it's used almost all year long. But even so, when it's used all year long, it's usually just weekends.
Let's talk about some of the changes that you've seen. Now, you have an interesting teacher certificate. That lets you teach anything. And I haven't talked to anybody, I don't think I've talked to anybody with that type of certificate. What sort of changes have you witnessed in the education field, especially in this area? Are there major changes or trends that have taken place since you began here that are completely different now?
Well, I could get on my soapbox. Certainly there have been changes, but basically it's the same. It's kind of like the more things change, the more things stay the same. It's certainly, you know, when I went to school here almost 50 years ago, we didn't have anything like auto shop. We did have a wood shop of sorts. But that was a very small operation, and you know, those kinds of things. And of course now technology is a big thing in the schools, and it's something that I was involved in when it first got started. I ran the computer lab that we had with Commodore 64s for quite a while. You know, that was when computers were first coming into schools in the 80s, back in the dinosaur age as far as computers are concerned. That's probably been the biggest change as far as teaching techniques. But also there have been them. Now, one of the things I suspect people would expect someone to say are changes like the No Child Left Behind legislation. Well, I've lived through four or five major programs like No Child Left Behind, and they all end up the same. I got kind of cynical toward the last one. Didn't pay much attention to those things when they came in, because I knew in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years they would be gone again. And that's because the poorest way to deal with education is to have a bunch of legislators decide how you're going to teach, what you're going to teach, and all that. It needs to be done on the local level, with the local school board and the faculty and administration and those kinds of decision makers. It just doesn't work when you try to make all the schools the same. Give you an example. Oregon has the SIM and CAM program. Well, one of the areas that has never been, unless they're doing it this year, successfully tested was the social studies area, which is my area. And if you just take U.S. history, you can see why. Well, number one, in the time that you have to teach U.S. history, you never can teach all of U.S. history. It's impossible. And so a teacher usually picks and chooses what areas they're going to teach. And usually they do that according to what they are best suited to teach. If they're an economics a major, for instance, they might teach you U.S. history as an economic theme. They might, if they're a Civil War buff, they might spend a lot of time on Civil War. But when you get a standardized test, there might be only two questions on the Civil War. Well, that means that teacher is going to have to change what they teach and shorten that Civil War in order to include all the other questions that are on there, and just cover the two areas of the questions that are on Civil War, teaching to the test and stuff. And that's why there hasn't been any test on social studies. What are you going to test on? You know, it's not going to be fair to some kids. It's not going to be fair to the teachers.